From the American Tobacco Historic District, this is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stasio. As part of our ongoing series, North Carolina Voices Studying High School, we are talking today about one inescapable reality of the modern high school experience, technology. Today's teens don't just catch up on their email after school. They IM, text message, three-way call on their BlackBerries, and spend hours perfecting their MySpace homepage. But after a hard day's work of high-tech gossip, what toll does all this technology take on our teens? Today we're talking about teens, families, and the Internet, and at what point does technology interfere with just being a kid? Are we hurting our kids by not stopping the communication, or should we participate, get to know more about it, and celebrate the joy? Welcome your calls, 877-962-9862. You can give us a call or send us an email at sot@wunc.org. But first, the General Assembly is back at work at the Capitol in Raleigh, and even though this is only a short session, lawmakers have already packed the docket with bills for minimum wage hikes and surplus spending. And they aren't wasting any time on the pulpit. The first bill in the short session passed yesterday, an emergency allowance for state prisons. So, what's next on the agenda? Joining us now from her Capitol perch is North Carolina Public Radio Capitol reporter Laura Leslie. Laura, welcome. It seems right now the short session is about money, extra money, a surplus. The state ends up with more money than it expected. How much more and why?
Well, how much more is a very good question. It has to do with the fact that most of these numbers are projected numbers because they're trying to figure out how much money they're going to have to spend as it comes in over the year. So a lot of how big the surplus is going to be kind of depends on whose formula you believe. But it also depends on what you'd like to do with that money because, of course, there are folks who would like to say that it's going to be $2.4 billion, and for that reason, they'd like to spend it on item A, B, or C, you know. And then you have the folks who are a little more conservative, including Governor Easley, who says the surplus is only maybe closer to $1.1 billion, and that a lot of the money that's left over is left over from last year on purpose for, you know, uses like the rainy day fund and for capital construction projects. So there's a wide range of opinion as to how big the surplus actually is.
So once you figure out exactly how much is there, then, as you say, the question is what to do with it. And I guess at this point, the way to decide or the lawmakers are dividing is over whether you should put money into ongoing expenditures like, say, pay hikes, which you can't really pull back, or whether you should put it into one-time expenditures or a rainy day fund, right?
Right. Well, that's because you can't be sure. As we said, this year we've got this extra money, and that's mainly because the economy did well. When the economy does well, the budget does well. But when they look ahead, the House Appropriations Committee says, you know, the economy is predicted to soften next year, and they're expecting to be either $500 million or more than $1 billion in the hole a year or two down the road. So what you're saying is very true. You have to be very careful about what you call recurring expenditures, things that you promise to fund every year, as opposed to those one-time expenditures where you throw a chunk of money to a government agency to fix some buildings or whatever. That one-time money is a fairly safe expenditure of money like this that's a surplus and that you can't be sure about next year. But the recurring money is the one everybody wants. The tax cut, for example, that's a recurring revenue issue. State employees' raises, also a recurring issue. So you're going to see a lot of give and take between the House and the Senate and the governor's office as to how much of this money they want to count on seeing in years to come.
All right. Let's talk about another big money debate taking place in Raleigh right now. What to do with the lotto money? It's supposed to go to education. I didn't think there was much debate about that.
Well, nobody thought there was a lot of debate about it, but apparently there's a lot of concern that there will be a debate about it. And House Democrats held a press conference this morning. They're rolling out a couple of bills that they say will help to ensure that all that money goes where it's supposed to go. And I think the real issue here is looking at some other states like Virginia and California, where some folks say, you know, education was used to pass the lottery, but then, you know, shortly thereafter, that money started getting used for other things. And there's a lot of people who say they just don't want to see that happen.
And explain the way that works. And I think in Florida was another example where the lotto money does go into education, but then the education money comes out and goes somewhere else.
Right. It's a big shell game. I mean, it all goes into one pot. And whether or not you say those are the lottery dollars that are going into education or the other kinds of dollars that are going into education, it kind of depends on how you're looking at it. So this has been a chronic problem in other states, and they're looking for ways to try to get around that. For example, benchmarking the amount of money that's being spent in education, trying to be very specific about what exactly in education that money can be used for. But again, I mean, once you start shuffling the dollars around, it's kind of a moot point. But they're talking about an oversight commission in the legislature that would be on top of making sure that that money is being used the way we promised that it would be used when that bill was spent.
And the way to track that is to take a look at what you're spending now. And if you're taking in more money from lotto, then that budget should go up. In other words, you should add to the current budget and not replace the money that you have with the lotto money. So
right.
Is there evidence to show that there may already be some of these changes in the way the education budget is structured?
Well, you know, the governor said that when he put his More at Four kindergarten, pre-kindergarten program in place, for example, he said that was a program that should be paid for by the lottery, but the state was going to front the money until the lottery got passed. Okay. So, you know, at this point this year, they moved the money they were spending out of More at Four and replaced that with the lottery money, saying that that's not supplanting it. That program was always meant to be paid for by the lottery that didn't exist yet. So you can see supplanting it's a difficult term to define.
Reprogramming is another word, I guess, that's come up very often. another way to describe the shell game that goes on. And really,
right.
Well, there is talk now about the minimum wage. And I guess if you're making the minimum wage right now, you should be able to see a very discernible increase in whatever check it is you're receiving in a couple of months. It looks like there will be an increase in the minimum wage, Drew?
It seems likely at this point. I mean, nothing's ever for sure, of course. But the House Democrats are calling for a $1 increase from $5.15 to $6.15 an hour. You may remember last year the House managed to pass an 85-cent increase that would have gotten it up to $6, but it made it to the Senate, went into committee, and was never seen again. But this time there's some more folks who are in favor of it. Attorney General Richard Moore has thrown his name in there. Actually, they're calling it the $1 Moore campaign. So he's advocating strongly for raising the minimum wage as a good business practice. We've also got Governor Easley, who has said that he would also back a raise in the minimum wage. And you know, this isn't unusual. 20-some other states have done this already. I think Arkansas was the most recent. And it has to do with the fact that the federal government hasn't raised the minimum wage since 1997. And so the buying power of the minimum wage right now is at its either lowest or second lowest point, depending on who you believe, in 50 years. So it is a serious problem, and it contributes to uses of social services and government assistance programs and you name it. So there are a lot of legislators that do want to see this happen.
And it sounds like the biggest debate is over how much to increase the minimum wage.
Well, that's part of the debate. I mean, I think, you know, 85 cents or a dollar are probably where it's going to end up.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also the problem that some folks, especially in the Senate, would like to see a tax cut go through for these folks, for the small businesses, for example, that are going to have to shell out this money. So they're trying to, or there's a strong movement afoot, I should say, in some of the Senate committees to tie this increase in the minimum wage to some kind of a tax relief for the top income bracket and for small businesses.
All right. And outside of the money issues, there are questions of ethics at the Capitol right now. A shakeup in ethics committee rules. Tell us what's going on with the ethics legislation. Quite a bit, huh?
Oh, there's all kinds of ethics. They're falling thick and fast.
Mm-hmm.
The House Select Ethics Committee on Ethics has come up with no fewer than 10 bills that are going to rewrite the ethics laws in North Carolina. And
this is
going to
be the cleanest legislature in America then, right?
Well, right now it's a long way from it. I mean, honestly, our ethics laws are some of the weakest in the country, seriously. And so what they're talking about, the House has some ideas for what it would like to see happen. The Senate and the governor have some other ideas. But basically, a lot of it seems to center around, okay, what are you able to take from lobbyists? And that would be very little in most of these bills. Also, who should be in charge of enforcing this?
And
the House is talking.
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say the House is talking about having, for legislators, having its own commission and then letting the state ethics board, giving it more powers and letting it oversee the executive branch. The governor and his executive, chairman of the Board of Ethics, is saying, why don't we have one system to oversee all the branches like most states do? So that's where we're seeing a lot of the tension.
And are we likely to see more teeth in the enforcement, on the enforcement side, something along the lines of an ethics commission that would have subpoena power and some enforcement power?
That is in the House's version. The governor's version does not give it subpoena power. The governor's version would give it only recommendation power. It would serve like a filter so that anybody in any branch who wanted to lodge an ethics complaint could do it with this board. They would look over it, investigate it, and then refer it back to the appropriate branch for action. I mean, in one way, that's good because you don't have the fox overseeing the hen house. But on the other hand, you've got essentially an ethics commission that has no teeth, which is what you've got now, and we can see where it's gotten us this far.
And all of this comes after a year of ethical questions surrounding Speaker Jim Black and his tenure as Speaker. Any sense that his power and authority have at all been weakened by this?
He's having a rough week. The Senate has passed a ban on video poker, which Jim Black has historically defended as an important industry to the state's economy. That ban is coming back through the Senate today and will be probably headed to the House shortly. And it's a question of whether or not Black can afford not to take it up at this point. There's also the eye exam. You may remember last year, Jim Black stuck into the budget a controversial requirement for a mandatory comprehensive eye exam for all kids going into school at a cost of $100 or $120. Well, that got in a Senate Health Committee today. They passed a bill that would repeal that requirement. So that'll be headed to the Senate floor as well. So the Senate is definitely taking aim at quite a few things that were high on Jim Black's agenda in the past few sessions.
Short session, long on disappointment for Speaker Black. Laura, thanks a million.
Thanks very much.
Laura Leslie is the North Carolina Public Radio Capitol reporter. Just ahead, teens and the Internet, from text messaging to MySpace. Are our high schoolers too tech-savvy for their own darn good? You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay with us.